Hello and welcome to the new series of the True Tales of Luxury podcast. I'm Tiffany Dark, the editor-in-chief here at Harrods, and with a little help from my friends, I'm going to take you on a journey into the universe of modern luxury. Our store is literally bursting at the seams with all sorts of beautiful, curious, and sometimes slightly unbelievable things. And so my friends and I have taken on the challenge of picking out our favourite moments from the store each week, and we'll be telling you all about them. Along the way, I'll also be talking to some of the incredible designers, creators, and artisans who help craft our modern luxury universe and getting the scoop on how they do it. Anyway, I'd be in so much trouble if I didn't give my friends the introduction they deserve. So joining me each week will be Stacey Duguid, our fashion editorial director, otherwise known as the fashion editor, and prone to grand pronouncements about things like trouser lengths, and Katie Service, our beauty editorial director, who is a font of all wisdom and passion around the world of beauty, and there isn't much she doesn't know about free radicals and hair breadths. So without further ado, let's go and take a look at what the girls have quite literally brought to the table. Good afternoon, girls.
Hello, Tiff.
Hi, Tiff.
Look what I've brought you.
I wondered why you were carrying a white monster onto your arm.
What is that?
Isn't it the best? What do you think it is?
What a question.
Katie, what do you think it is? You
go well, first. It looks like... It looks like a sheep,
yes.
But gold.
And white.
And white. And with horns.
And with huge gold lips and three legs.
Why has it only got three legs?
Why have you only got two?
Good point.
It is basically a white porcelain ball with a pair of gold lips on it that look like they've probably been to visit Dr. Costas in the wellness clinic, two gold horns and three gold legs. And look, girls, if you take the top off like this, I'm just grabbing him by his horns. Underneath,
oh
you'll
my goodness.
Find that the gold legs are actually some kind of stand. And in there, you put incense, light it, put the big white ball back on the top, and the incense smoke comes out the horns.
Wow. I've never seen anything more extraordinary in my life.
It's certainly a conversation starter, isn't it? This I brought it along because this is possibly this week my favourite thing at Harrods. It is by a company called L'Objet, and it's a collaboration that they have with these artists, the Haas brothers. And L'Objet was started by this Israeli guy, not so very long ago, actually, about 15 years ago, but it has really established itself as being a company that produces exquisite craftsmanship, crazy things with great stories around them. They actually do fabulous cutlery, teapots, diningware, that kind of thing. But this was a total game changer for them when they collaborated with this artistic duo. And they have created these extraordinary objects, which apparently we can't keep in store. And they come in white and gold like this one. They come in multicolors. They come in black and red. And you can, and different sizes as well. And you can actually line them up on your mantelpiece like a flock of sheep.
Sorry for laughing.
And everyone walks into your sitting room and says, "What on earth is that?"
And you say, "It's a smoking sheep." It's very textural. I actually want to touch it. I love the way it feels.
I feel like if he was in my home, he'd be my friend.
You could talk to him at night.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. It's just one of those things, isn't it, which is just so exquisitely beautiful that you can't help look at it and talk about it and admire it. And does that thing, I think, that luxury should do, which is provide you with those little punctuated moments of respite from the rest of the world.
Do you know where I could see him? Is it a him or a her?
It's a him, I think.
Mm. With those lips, definitely. I could almost see it kind of arranged on a curated coffee table with some art books and a fashion book and a candle. Do you know what I mean?
It's like a shelfie moment, isn't it? Like for shelfies on Instagram when you curate your shelf and say, this is all about me and all the books that I'm pretending I've read and haven't yet. this would be on your shelf next to the books.
It would be.
Along with a succulent.
Do you have a lot of objet, Tiff?
I don't have enough l'objet, actually.
One can never have enough.
But what I like about the Haas brothers, actually, is they are this crazy American art duo, and they started off, the real brothers, they started off with a commission from Tobey Maguire. Do you remember Spider-Man?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, so he said, can you come and do my house? And they're crazy thinkers, and they did crazy things to his house. And Lady Gaga saw it, and she went, can you do something for me? And then Donatella Versace saw it and said, can you do something for me?
Oh, my goodness.
So you can imagine that if you're the kind of artistic duo that makes things for people like Lady Gaga and Donatella Versace, you have a certain aesthetic. And look, it's just beautiful. Touching it, it just feels gorgeous. The brass is gorgeous. And then it actually does have a function because you can put incense in it and it does smoke. And actually, these days, incense is so much more on trend than scented candles, isn't it? I'm throwing out a question to you, beauty editorial director.
I mean, I think it's all about Palo Santo at the moment, going back to the roots.
I have it. I burn it in a bowl at night.
And you could probably put Palo Santo in there, right?
Should I know what Palo Santo is?
It's like a wood, isn't it?
Yes.
And you burn the end and then it lets off a really beautiful kind of grounding smoke. A lot of kind of yogis use it. A lot of,
It's used to clear spaces and if you're into smudging and kind of witchy stuff.
Shamanic ceremonies.
So it's shamanic ceremonial wood.
But how shamanic is this?
Quite, actually.
Yeah.
Quite Celtic.
Hang on, we're getting somewhere now. He's actually a shaman. He is in himself the god of your household.
The god of incense.
The god of incense. Great.
So, Tiff, if you were to choose a scent to go in your little moshy monster, what would you choose?
Well, my favourite scent is actually rose, but I don't think he would suit a rose. I think he needs something a little bit more musky and mysterious and... perhaps now we've established it shamanic. I think that he's probably going to cast a spell on the room when he's smoking.
So perhaps frankincense?
Frankincense!
Ancient. Mm.
Good tip there, Service.
Helps you breathe, gives you pause, makes you take a deep breath. Very grounding.
Which is the whole point about him. So come on, girls, what do you think? Is it luxury?
It's mad enough to be luxury.
It's mad luxury. Mm. That's what it is. So, girls, I think I've got the most visually arresting object on the table because looking at you, Casey, that just looks like a white box.
Ah, well, it looks like a white box from where you are, but if I just turn it around, you can see...
Oh, my goodness.
It's got a beautiful Chanel label on it.
And we love those.
And we know there's something exciting inside this box. It does look like a wardrobe, doesn't it?
Hang on, it says Coromandel Chanel Paris Parfum. What's Coromandel?
So Coromandel was... it's a type of a kind of chinoise screen that an interior screen.
A divider.
Mm-hmm. That Coco Chanel used to have in her Parisian apartment.
Is that the actual French name for it, Coromandel?
I'm not sure. I believe so.
I've been to her apartment in
Paris.
Have you? Yeah.
Did you see the screens?
I did.
So this little box is really quite special. Now, there are only 40 of these boxes in the world.
I'm not surprised you've got one.
Is that why it said 16 of 40 at the back?
Exactly. So this is the 16th that was made of a series of 40, and we have this one here in Harrods, up in the Salon de Parfum, which gives you a little bit of a clue as to what's inside it. And if I open the little doors of the wardrobe, I think you're going to be happy.
Oh, my goodness.
It is lined in Chanel tweed, the lovely navy and gold and white tweed.
The weave is divine. And is that a little brooch?
Exactly. So you can see nestled in the back of this little boucle box is a little perfume bottle. It's actually a baccarat bottle. So it's a beautiful crystal bottle. And some gorgeous Chanel costume jewellery. And the whole point of this box is that it brings three of the kind of métier d'art or maison d'art of Chanel together. You get the boucle, you get the baccarat and the fragrance, and then you get the jewellery. And it's a beautiful kind of oriental scent. It's also a pure perfume. Do you know the difference between a parfum, like a pure perfume, and eau de parfum, EDP, or an EDT?
I've had it explained to me before, but I'm not sure I quite understand.
Well, the simplest way, the kind of least scientific way to understand it, is that an eau de toilette, an EDT, is going to last on your skin about 2 to 4 hours. Mm-hmm. An EDP, which is an eau de parfum, is going to last about 4 to 6. And a pure perfume, which is what this is going to last you like 6 to 8 hours, if not more. Like, I've put some pure perfumes on me that I can still smell the next day.
I can smell the perfume that some people are wearing. They clearly haven't reapplied it. I can still smell them at the end of the day, but I can't. Mine just disappears.
So you should put a drop on each wrist drawn down and a drop...
I like it behind each ear.
Yeah.
And if someone gives you a kiss on the cheek or gives you a hug, then they get like a very faint smell of it. And that's quite nice, right?
And should you put it on your clothes?
I mean, it kind of goes on your clothes, doesn't it? If you have it on your wrists and it goes on your sleeves and... Yeah, I mean...
I wouldn't. Sorry, fashionista butting in. I wouldn't put it on your clothes, especially not a parfum. I feel like it may... I don't know. Could it do some damage? Would it get oil on your clothes?
I suppose,
like, it's
it
kind
might.
Kind of thing you wouldn't want to try and dry
not
clean out.
Not a silk blouse.
Let's not recommend putting parfum on clothes.
I have actually ruined some tops with spraying perfume because I do. I put it on my clothes rather than my skin. Just
like a room freshener.
thank you. Anyway, so back to the Chanel.
So the other thing I wanted to tell you about this, I suppose, is that the other kind of beautiful, quite traditional craft that's used in making this is something, and I'm sorry, Chanel, if I'm going to say this wrong, but it's called badrouchage. Mm-hmm. Heard of that?
No.
Okay, good. It's a French art of sealing a bottle. And I've actually seen it done in the South France in Grasse with Chanel. And they get a kind of strip of membrane and it's wrapped very tightly around the top of the bottle. Okay, to form a very precise seal. And then a beautiful black pearl piece of cotton is wrapped around it. And then a drop of wax is dropped over it. You can see the wax there. And then they stamp a Chanel C into the double C, into the wax. It seals. And then your perfume is completely preserved until you open it the first time.
It sounds like the opposite of mass manufacture. I mean, it's just
it's
so luxurious.
An antidote to kind of modern mass luxury.
And there's only 40 of them.
In the world. And one of them we have here.
I'm obsessed with that boucle. It's gorgeous. I would love a jacket in that.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the jewel. I'm not actually looking at it now because it's facing you guys. But where would you put that, Stacey? Because you can actually take this piece of jewelry out and wear it.
Should we just describe it? It's like a tree,
I
guess.
It's a swallow nestling on a branch. I couldn't tell you what the flowers are, but she loves her symbolism. Coco Chanel loved flowers and nature and wheat, actually. She was obsessed with wheat and astrology. And so they probably represent something, those flowers. I wonder what they are.
It's a camellia, isn't it?
It's a camellia. She loves camellia. She loved. But I love this because actually each one is sort of like a little cluster. It's like an old-fashioned, almost feels quite Edwardian, actually. Little clusters of small, what would they be? Is it costume jewelry?
It is
crystals.
It is. So
they're rock crystals. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So 5 little crystals around a center. So it's almost like petals around a center. And then they're all varying in sizes and leaves, little leaves and sprigs. It looks like a little spring sort of branch that the swallow has just landed on. It's divine.
And actually, we were at the Chanel show this season and the amount of decorative jewelry. And brooching and the bracelets that were used on every single outfit. It's just such a beautiful way to lift a monochromatic palette, isn't it? That they were out of fashion for a very long time, weren't they? I remember my grandmother had loads of brooches and I wasn't interested in wearing any of them. And now it seems like the more decoration is coming back.
Yeah, it's an easy way to add decoration. If you don't want to wear a scarf or multiple earrings or whatever, you could just put that sort of neatly onto the lapel of a black jacket. It would be so chic. Actually, day to night, I mean, talk about just jazzing up your jacket. If you're going out for dinner or going to the theatre, put on that gorgeous, gorgeous brooch. They feel like they're coming back.
Yes.
Don't look now, guys. Afternoon tea is here.
Oh, my goodness. Delicious, delicious.
This is the best thing about being at Harrods, isn't it? So we've got patisseries, tiny little sandwiches with the crusts cut off, all on beautiful silver trays and platters.
It's so visual. It's so colourful. And like, the textures are incredible. Look at that green. What is that green, do we think? That little green cake.
It's a pistachio cream. And this little red cube of gorgeousness here. This is a raspberry parfait, about the size of a large dice. probably need two mouthfuls to get through that one, don't you?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going, what are you going to have, girls?
I love that you know what's on there quite well, Tiff. That's impressive.
I've had a few teas.
Okay, Tiff, what is this? Do you know what this is? Is this a little apple pie?
It's a little apple pie with a caramelised top.
Okay,
and some
I'm going
gold
in.
Leaf.
I'm going in.
Do it.
Oh, my goodness.
Is it good? Actually, Phil Curry, who's the pastry chef here, he says that one of the tips he was given by his master patisserie when he was in his training was, if in doubt, put gold leaf on the top of everything.
That is so clever.
I think that's right.
That is so Harris.
If in doubt, add gold.
It's like a kind of really luxe apple pie.
Katie, what are you going for?
I'm going to have a little brioche egg sandwich. Because
with cress on top. Two mouthfuls. Good? And this one here is your Instagram moment. This is the little Harrods patisserie. It's a green sort of globe with a brown and gold Harrods H on top and a biscuit base. And look, when you dive in with your fork in the middle, inside is gorgeous oozing chocolate cream. Basically, all I need in life is a cake, and I'm very happy. Now, Stacey, I don't actually see anything on the table from you. Is it a metaphysical object?
It is not a metaphysical object. I've got it all wrapped up here. Excuse me.
Under your chair.
I'm sorry, okay. I'm going to make a bit of a crinkle sound here. So,
I see gorgeousness.
Oh, wow.
Introducing the BV Snap.
Excuse me while I hyperventilate. This object is so beautiful. It is a brown leather. You're going to tell
square.
Me. Square.
Square.
I think it's a bag, a clutch. I think I know the label, but fill us in.
Okay. Now, this is Daniel Lee's. So let's backtrack. Bottega Veneta. The most beautiful, the hottest label of the moment. Would you argue with me on that?
No, having been to the shows this season and seen every single fashion editor and buyer clutching several Bottega Veneta items.
Like children. So Bottega Veneta was established in 1966. I mean, you'd think it would be older than that, wouldn't you? You'd think it was some sort of, I don't know, late 1800s brand, but it was established in 1966. But Daniel Lee, the creative director, the brand new creative director, joined on the 1st of July, 2018.
British guy.
Wait, better than Brit. He's a Northerner. He's from Bradford. I mean, this is probably one of my most favourite facts about Daniel Lee, apart from the fact that he is an amazing designer.
Bradford is not what you would associate with Bottega Veneta,
you know,
Milan.
He is the oldest of three siblings. His sister is an A&E nurse, and his father was a mechanic. And can I tell you, so this sidetrack off this gorgeous object for us just a second. I was at the Bottega Veneta show in Milan recently, and I was seated opposite his family, and I have to say, I was almost moved to tears watching them because they are proper salt of the earth, Bradford family. This boy done good. He went to St. Martin's. He was always described as kind of the geeky nerd. He loved science, but he loved art. And he went to Central St. Martin's from Bradford, from this very ordinary family, this ordinary background, and has taken on his journey all of his mates that he met at Central St. Martin's. So they all work for him in the studio. He's from this very close-knit family, and he's created his own fashion family, which I think is so, you can feel it in the clothes.
Yeah, but he's done it in two seasons.
He's
literally done two collections, and he is now the hottest brand on the planet, right?
Absolutely. So what I love about what he's done with he's very kind of, you know, he's taken the heritage of the brand. He's played with the codes and the motifs. And one of the biggest, sort of most established motif of the house is the Intricetto. Now, disclaimer.
Is that an Italian accent there, Stacey?
Disclaimer. In my head.
Say it again.
I've said it incorrectly now because you're making me nervous. So I'm going to actually just. So what's
Intrecciato.
Intreccio.
Intreccio.
Intreccio. There you go. Third time lucky.
She's very good at speaking Italian.
Now, disclaimer.
When
disclaimer.
We go to Milan, she's very good at ordering the wine.
And it's a process or a technique, rather, that's been around. Can you hear that squeaking?
Yes.
Okay, oh, hear the leather
while you talk because it's very squeaky.
It's very squeaky. So Intreccio has been around since Renaissance. And actually what it is, it's a weaving technique and it's to make fabrics stronger. So what happened in 1966 when the company began, when Bottega Veneta began, is essentially they had these sewing machines, but they couldn't fit the leather beneath the sewing machines. And so they had to use very, 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 there's two founders. Let me just try and get this correct. Michele Taddei and Renzo Zenghiaro. Apologies if they if that sounded Japanese.
Bueno.
So they established this leather goods company in Vicenza in Italy in 1966. And basically, to make the material stronger, this very, very fine pieces of leather, they discovered that if they did this intreccio and wove the pieces together, that they could create these amazing bags. And that's where Daniel Lee started with this line. He started with the intreccio, and as you can see on this bag, he has blown it up to XXL. So it's still the same weave they were using in the 1960s, but it's modernized.
Can I stop you there? Because I had a question for one of my non-fashion friends the other day, which was, what is it about Bottega Veneta? Why is everybody, or is it Bottega Veneta?
Bottega Veneta, I say. You say Bottega Veneta,
I say Veneta. Anyway, what was it about Bottega? What is it about Bottega Veneta which makes it the hottest brand on the planet? And it's very hard to put your finger on why this is so cool.
I'll tell you what it is. It's power. It's power and empowerment. It has very little to do with pure play fashion. And it has very little to do with pure play heritage. It's about power. The square toe shoes are so aggressive and so punky and so fabulous. Women feel powerful. And Daniel Lee's whole message is empowerment for women. He loves these strong clothes that are clothes for women. Hey, do you fancy wearing a kind of, you know, slightly baggy shorts, boiler suit made in leather? It's clunky. It's a bit off.
I love that.
But I love it too. Yeah. And women love it. And it's not clothes. Sorry, I'm going to have to say this. You don't wear those clothes to attract the opposite sex. You wear them for yourself and for each other. And that's the point of Bottega. And that's what he has done. And by creating this design team that are young, you know, he's 35 now. He was 32 or 33 when he took the job. It's very young. He also worked with Phoebe Philo for 8 years.
And we love her.
We love her. And she was all about that message of clothes for women and empowerment.
Phoebe Philo, pieces that make you feel strong.
And Phoebe Philo was the creative director, the creative genius behind Celine up until recently, a couple of seasons ago.
Stace, I've been looking at this bag for some time now, and I can't really see how you would open it.
Okay, the BV snap. I have two questions for you. What do you notice about this clasp?
It looks like it's kind of a lacquered walnut with a brass...
What else do you notice about it?
Well, it's halved in the middle, isn't it?
Okay, so this half is silver and half is gold.
Oh, so it is.
Why?
Silver on one side and gold on the other.
Because Daniel Lee figured that when you're trying to match your accessories and you have one bag, but you're wearing a silver bangle or a silver ring or a silver necklace, you can wear it that way. Or if you're wearing gold accessories, you simply turn it around.
Oh, snap. So simple, but so genius.
And I'm going to demonstrate the snap. I just almost took my eyelashes off. So it snaps open like a little square. Look at that. Now, the brilliant thing about this is Daniel Lee's motto and mantra, I'm putting words into his mouth, but I've read enough about him to know that he wants to make things that last forever, that stand the test of time. He's a little bit like, if you could put him up there with Hermès, with Chanel, with Celine, he wants to make bags that last forever. And this kind of piece, tell me what's missing.
A big fat wallet inside it.
A big fat wallet, correct. If dark, what else?
Oh, actually, you only just need a card these days.
What else is missing from this bag? No logo.
I was just going to say that.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine.
No logo.
So there we have it. Thank you so much, girls. I'm going to vote, obviously, for my little monster on the table here for being the definition of modern luxury. But I have to say, one of 40 limited edition bottles of pure parfum Chanel with a Chanel brooch up there, I'm definitely, definitely taken with that one. And then this beautiful Bottega pouch and the snap, right? I haven't seen this bag yet and now I want it.
Hey! Listen, girls, I've got a treat for you. This is my friend Russell.
So let me catch you up, girls. This is the Russell Young, who is responsible for those incredible artworks that we had in the windows of Harrods at the beginning of this year in January. We did an amazing exhibition of his work down in the Halcyon Gallery. And he does these amazing black and white cropped portraits of legendary cultural figures in different coloured screen prints. and then diamond dusted. And what completely blew my mind when I first talked to Russell about them was how he made them. So you have a very special printing press, don't you?
I do. I inherited Warhol's printing press.
Andy
Warhol's printing press. And the first diamond dust painting I ever created was from a bag of Andy Warhol's diamond dust.
Oh, my goodness.
And I still use his paints. The Bruce Lee that's at the Fame exhibition in the Halcyon Gallery is some of it's from one of Andy Warhol's pots of paint. So
how did that happen? What's the connection?
There was a man called Jean-Yves who, when Andy Warhol died, bought a lot of the equipment. And he retired and passed it on to my master printer who was assisting him at the time.
And actually, if you watch Russell work, it's an incredibly physical process.
It's a very physical, yeah. It's a very physical process. We're crawling over the ground, six of us pushing the ink through the screens onto the...
Because these works, they're about 6 foot by 4 foot?
Yeah, no, there's one in the Halcyon Gallery that's probably 7 by 5 or something like that in one pull. So, yeah.
And you pull the...
Yeah, we actually push the ink through the screen. I mean... And it's thick oil-based ink, so...
You must have a ginormous studio to do that.
Yeah. There's, Halcyon have set up a website called Fame for the exhibition, and there's a 3-minute film on there that shows the whole process, which is really cool. Mm. And even the diamond dusting for the first time.
And just explain how you diamond dust a screen print?
Up until now, I've always said that I pin the paintings on my studio wall at night and put a huge pile of diamond dust, and at night Tinkerbell comes and spreads it around. But really, it's me, my master printer, and about 9 other people crawling on the ground, throwing it and pushing it in and rolling it in. And yeah, it's a very physical process as well. So
where'd you get the diamonds?
They're sourced from, I'm not actually going to give that away.
So reveal your sources, Russell. No.
But what's really interesting, well, there's many things that's interesting about how you produce your works, but I think it's a very eclectically curated sort of array of personalities that you've chosen. So each one of your works is about some kind of cultural legendary figure that has shaped the Western world. So we've got Marilyn Monroe, Audrey Hepburn,
Muhammad Ali, Elizabeth Taylor,
David Bowie,
Bruce Lee, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards.
And tell us why you chose the people that you chose.
I think growing up in Northern England, there wasn't a lot of optimism. In sort of like, I was a teenager in the 70s there, but sort of growing up in the 60s, 70s, the sort of music was very... it was right at the front of my household, the Rolling Stones, Jimi Hendrix, the Doors. So that was always there, but it was outside. It was gray and miserable. And, you know, like the Eskimos have 20 words for snow, I have 20 words for the word gray or drizzle or whatever. I mean, it was pretty brutal as well. It was pretty, pretty horrible. And so this was my escapism. And my father would take me to the movies, or we'd watch these films of Marilyn, and just this was like this magical world for me. So that they very early age, they became my heroes and heroines. And it just developed from there.
It's not like today, is it, in the world of Instagram, where you see kind of everyone behind the, you know, behind closed doors. But back in those days, legends were legends.
And there wasn't much access to them, you know. I mean... Audrey Hepburn, most people would have never seen her. Now, you know, I mean, you want to go see Kanye West, you know, you can see him anywhere in Los Angeles. You know, it's sort of like they're more accessible.
So how did you get into this world then?
I was a photographer for 15 years. I always took photographs. I always drew from 3 or 4 years old, always took photographs. And I became a photographer in the music industry. So I did lots of record sleeves, magazine covers. I did George Michael's Faith sleeve.
Stop right there. George Michael's Faith sleeve.
That was the first sleeve I ever did. And probably more than half the pictures you've seen of George are mine. So we had a great relationship over the years.
Do you remember the video for Faith? It was amazing. It was with all the supermodels.
That was Freedom.
That was Freedom, yes.
And
that's right.
There's a verse in there for me. Take back that picture on your wall. So basically, he was a willing participant and we were collaborators, but I created that image, the Faith image, and the leather jacket was my friend's leather jacket. And I knew I wanted to do that, take his shirt off. I'd listened to the record in 1986 before it was released, and I knew it was going to be this classic record. So we looked at the Jim Morrison Doors sleeve where he has the little love beads around it. And I said, let's just put one thing from today. So that's the little cross earring.
Oh, yeah.
And then I took his shirt off. I put the leather jacket on. The leather jacket has this double seaming, so it had a little bit more interest to it. And I mean, it was literally one roll and I knew I had it. So, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought of using him for one of your
pieces? Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, we'll have to wait for that, won't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, yeah, it's coming soon.
Now, also, I understand that as well as these works that you can actually now see in the new exhibition that's opened at Halcyon Gallery in Mayfair.
Yes.
And you have several works still on display here in Harrods as well, don't you? And actually, have you seen them? Because they, when you get up close to them, they are really very powerful because it's almost 3D with the diamonds on it.
Well, that's sort of when I was talking to my master printer about putting this other layer when we use the Warhol diamond dust. I wanted them to be tactile. I wanted them to always be like this veil in front of them, something that you can't sort of really reach, but that was glamorous, that just had this radiance to it. And, you know, I mean, you're not allowed to touch paintings, but even with the diamond dust on, it's like, you know, sort of being like a moth to the flame, sort of you want to touch, the moth wants to touch the flame. So I love that
you know. It's like you want to know more, don't you?
Yeah.
You want to really get into that person's psyche, that
personality. And you know, the paintings move as you walk around them, they glitter and move and, you know, they reflect light. And
I think it's interesting because you have got other people's photographs, other photographers' works, and then you crop it how you want it. That's right, isn't it?
Yes.
And then you do the print and the diamond dust.
Yeah, I mean, I have one in the Fame Show at the Halcyon Gallery that is called Marilyn Crying. And it's a crop right in of her head and her hands up to her eyes. She's crying. She's just come out of the court from the divorce from Joe DiMaggio. But the original photographs was like 20 times the size of this section that I've taken. And then I do this dot screen on them, which is dots per inch, which is like newspaper print. So you get the dots. So I've put quite large dots on that and it just becomes this magical thing. So I'm always looking at images and focusing in on these sections.
And working out how you can kind of twist them and doctor them.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that I really love about your work is it celebrates analog culture.
Yes.
So, you know, it's very physical, the printing process.
Yeah.
You use photographs, printed photographs.
Yes.
And obviously we live in a really digital world now. And Russell, when we last talked, I have to say, you said a couple of things to me, which I found myself repeating to people because I was so taken with them. And I love this, but he told me that he basically put his phone away, threw his phone away 2 years ago.
Yeah, just over 2 years ago, I was chasing news and news cycle and getting up like 5, 6 a.m. in the morning and looking at the left media, looking at the right media and just not feeling very happy or creative. And I was with my master printer and there's maybe like 9 of us working in there and they were all on their phones and they were all talking about what was happening in the world. And I'm just like, let's stop this. It just kills my creative process. And I did that in my own studio in California. So I only have an old record player there, vinyl. There's no phone. My phone doesn't go in there. There's no TV. There's no computers. And I get bored. And I get bored and I work through that creative process. I live quite close to the beach. The studio's even closer. I can go surfing. I can get that out of me. But I come back and then I'm confronted with the same problem, but I might have solved it. Out of that process also, I've gone in these lunar cycles now. So I don't even know what day it is today. And I've sometimes struggled with the month, which I adore.
That's so lovely. You are literally lost in time.
Yeah, and I go on these full hikes up in the, I've got mountains which are about 5,000 feet above me and I go hiking for 24 hours, maybe do 24, 25 miles, sleep out rough. I sleep under freeways by the ocean. I swim out half a mile or so in the full moon, 11 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. And you just forget the world. And, you know, I mean, we're all surrounded by people all the time. So it's that escapism. It's giving myself time, giving me freedom. I've got 3 children, which is an amazing experience. But sometimes, you know, to be a great parent, you need to give yourself some time as well.
Do you sometimes forget to pick them up from school?
No. Never.
Go back to the lunar cycle, because that is fascinating. Do you find that you behave differently at different times of the lunar cycle?
Well, it's called lunatic for a reason, right? I mean, if all the oceans can be moved by the moon, you know, surely the fluids in our brain and our body can be. But no, I don't find myself any more creative or not. No.
You did say something to me last time about the light. And obviously where you create in California, yeah, the light is really different from back here in London. Yeah.
So, well, all the colours I use are pigments from all over the world. I mean, I will, with my kids, I stop the car and go climb a rock face in Hawaii to find this red vein of earth, and I bring it back and I pound it and make it into pigment. And I go to this old guy in Florence and get these beautiful pigments and mix these pigments up. So pigments are coming from all over the world to my studio. But in California, where I mix the pigments and hand paint the backgrounds, there's so much light, and I'm near the ocean, so there's so much reflective light. And, you know, your eyes close down, so you're taking in less light. So the colors you mix, I knew when I brought them to all the windows there, to Harrods and to Halcyon Gallery, I knew I wanted to bring these really strong pigments so that in the winter light in Northern Europe and in England, it's the sun is low in the horizon all day long, and it always seems to be filtered through these gray clouds. So I knew that it's a beautiful light, but I knew when it hit the pigments and the paintings and the windows that there would be this beautiful reflective light coming back. So yeah, I was really excited to bring these optimistic California colours to winter in England.
Well, Russell, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon for tea. It's lovely to see you. I tell you what, I'm coming to Halcyon Gallery in Mayfair tonight for
Wonderful.
A party, because I can't wait to see the bigger collection.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again to the wonderful Russell Young. Don't miss a chance to see his work up close in the Harrods Halcyon Gallery on the third floor, or visit his virtual exhibition on halcyon.com.
We'll be back again next week. If you'd like to receive the new episode as soon as it's available, be sure to hit the subscribe button in your podcast app. Until next week, goodbye.